Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Well, we got a couple really great podcasts for y'all. This one is with a couple who's really struggling with their small dog, reacting to literally everything, and they don't know where to start. So I go over why their dog has got to this point and what they need to do to fix it. And I think it's going to be really helpful for you guys, especially for you. It doesn't matter if you have a small dog or a big dog. So many dog owners come to me and they're like, oh man, my dog is super reactive and I don't know what to do. And I'm okay. So these are the two. This is why your dog becomes reactive. And this is actually fundamentally step-by-step how to overcome reactivity for free for you guys here on the podcast. Right now we are doing $100 off all of my courses. You guys, we're doing it for a little bit, but definitely it is today for you guys. All you guys have to do is enter YouTube at TomDavisCourses.com. So head over to TomDavisCourses.com or click the link in my description and put in the discount code YouTube and save $100 off all the bundles in every single course. And in most courses, that's over 50% off. So also heading to the Netherlands this weekend. So excited to get over there. So anyway, you guys, enjoy this podcast. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you in the next episode. Also, everybody, this December the 7th and 8th, 2024, I will be doing a seminar at my facility in upstate New York at the Upstate Canine Academy. I'm very excited. These are just announced. This will 100% sell out. It does every single time we do it. Working spots and weekend audit spots are available. Get your tickets in the link below. So excited to do a seminar in my hometown, of course, in my own facility. And I'll see you guys this December. What's going on?
When we go on walks, it goes very reactive. And we just have to avoid dogs at all costs. And we can't because we live in Brooklyn. So if we run into dogs, we try to do positive reinforcement. Like we try to, you know, distract him, give him high value treats. And it doesn't really work. It's just he's very reactive and it looks aggressive the way he reacts to other dogs.
Yeah. Zuko's a small dog. He's 13-pound Yorkie Maltese mix. So I think, you know, as my wife said, one of our biggest problems is like we've been trying a few techniques with him, like, you know, positive reinforcement. We got a clicker from another trainer, mm-hmm. and he actually takes treats when, let's say, the dog is far enough. He takes the treats. He stays seated. Now, if the dog starts approaching to us, then his mindset completely changes and he forgets about the treats, he forgets about the clicker, and he just gets into trying to lunge at the dog, tries to bark and tries to just escape from us and trying to get into the dog. And, you know, like, I think we got to a point like that, we really don't know what to do.
So what are you guys doing right now? Within your training, like how are you guys handling it? So you go out again, living in New York City, you inevitably, you know, run into a dog. How are you handling that?
So I'm always on the lookout for dogs. Like I'm the one who walks him most of the time. And so if I see a dog far away, if I can avoid the dog, I'll cross the street. Or like if I, yeah, I prefer to cross the street, but if I can't avoid the dog, we use something that's called a sidekick leash. I don't know if that's what it's called. That's what the trainer recommended that we use. And so it puts pressure on his snout, I guess. So anyway, so we try to sit him and get him into, like, get him to relax and see the dog from far. And like, if he looks at the dog, we'll say good, you know, and give him a treat or something. And it works up until the point that the dog comes close, and then he just flips out.
So
that's what we try to do.
Yeah. That makes sense. So essentially, when you're out for a walk and he sees another dog and he makes a good decision, you pay him with food and positive reinforcement. And what is the sidekick leash? So it's like a gentle leader type thing?
Yeah, it's something. Exactly. I think that's what it is. So it goes over his little snout, and then it goes underneath his throat, I guess.
Yep.
And
okay.
So you pull on it, and it does a little pressure, and it causes him to, like, sit. So he just, like, kind of, he's forced to sit in a way.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And are you using that, like, are you kind of pulling him back when he reacts, or are you using it more as a correction? Like, are you popping it and telling him to leave it, or do you find it to just be something helpful because he's a small dog that you can hold on to him?
It works so that he doesn't pull as much, because when he's on the harness, he likes to pull a lot. So it works in that, and it works there so that he doesn't pull as much when we use it, because we're able to, like, break him, like, we're able to pull it back a little and he'll stop.
Okay.
And if it's like a high stress situation, we're able to just, like, have him sit when we apply a gentle pressure to it. But then when he's past his threshold, it doesn't work at all, because I don't want to pull on it, because it makes him kind of choke and it scares us a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. And right now, do you feel like he's just, so let me be efficient here. Do you feel like he just wants to go after, do you feel like he just wants to, when he sees the dog, he's like, I don't know what to do, I'm freaking out. But the reality is he's not, like, aggressive, like he wouldn't do anything. Like, what do you think?
Well, you know, I feel like it's gotten worse, because we would tell people, hey, he's going to lunge and bark at your dog, and he hasn't been aggressive. And some people are, you know how people are pushy, and they'll say, oh, it's fine. And I say, okay, you know, let them greet, fine. And the few times that we've been able to do that, he just barks in the dog's face nonstop, and he, like, lunges. And he doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But the last few times that we tried that, it almost looks like he wants to nip at them in their nose. I have a video that I can send you if you want.
Yeah, I had to pull him because he was. I saw that he might just be too close to bite the other dog's nose. So I got scared, you know, of getting the other dog injured. So I pulled him. And then something I would like to share also is at a cousin's house, he had 3 Pomeranians. This was like a few months ago. And, you know, he told me, oh, maybe you just release your dog with the Pomeranians. He might just get along to them. And we started with one dog, and he becomes bully with that dog. It was the older Pomeranian. He starts to become bully, bark at him. And then eventually, you know, he ignored the Pomeranian. But then our cousin released the other 2 Pomeranians, which now it was like, I guess, the full pack. And then Zuko pretty much just stopped being, like, aggressive at them, but becomes very scared. So he was kind of finding corners to hide out.
Yeah, so basically we let him off leash with other dogs, and he was just scared. He just tried to hide. Like, he found a little hiding spot, and he didn't want to come out and interact with dogs. That's the only time we let him off leash. And it was because it was family, and, you know, they knew our situation.
Yeah, it sounds to me like he's really insecure. It's like classic leash reactivity from an insecure place, where he's policing and big bully and look how big I am and get out of here. And then once there's more than one, or once they're like, chill, he's like, he runs away and he's like, I don't know what to do. So there's 2 things to this. When dog owners come to me with this issue, I guess, so the symptom of the situation, which is like, you guys are like, this is our problem. I would say, excuse me, on the surface, that's the problem that you guys are dealing with. But the reality is you need to build more confidence in with the dog, because that's where this is coming from. It's very common with smaller dogs. excuse me, and the reason why smaller dogs typically have more insecurities and less confidence is for the simple fact of they're really easy to treat like not a dog. So, and this isn't a yes or no. This is just an observation that I have seen, and you guys can take it with a grain of salt. But the observations I've seen over time with smaller dogs being insecure are talking to the dogs too much, picking the dogs up during times of, I guess, stress, right? So if a dog gets nervous, we pick them up, or just lack of training in general. And so these are like the three biggest reasons why smaller dogs can become insecure. And so if you think about it, if a dog is hit with any type of stress or any type of situation that could cause them to be insecure, but, oh, I'm not really sure how to handle this. And at no point in time have they ever really been, not physically, but emotionally and mentally pushed to handle the situation, or at least try to figure it out instead of, like, air quotes, saved from the situation. This is where, think about it with humans, after every single situation that we have come into where it's a little conflict, and our, let's say, our parents or our bigger brother or bigger sister or whatever just saves us. It never really helps us. And I'm not saying that that's you guys. I'm just saying these are usually the recipes for having dogs become insecure. And so my suggestion for you guys is I can go over two big things that you guys should be concerned about and or learning about is how to stop the symptomatic behavior, which is the reactivity, right? Like a doctor would with a cold. Hey, you're sniffing and sneezing and have a fever, but it's because of this, right? It's not... You don't want a Band-Aid. You want to say, well, it's just going to pop up again, right? So mm-hmm. I can go over how to stop the reactivity that is causing the call, because a lot of people, that's what they want to do. And it's not to any regard to them not wanting to solve the actual internal, like, core issue. It's only because they don't realize that actually reactivity is caused by insecurity 90% of the time. So that's what I want to talk about with you guys. That's going to be the most helpful and most sustainable for you guys. How to stop mm-hmm. How to address the actual problem that you're seeing with the reactivity, but then also how to build up confidence, which is causing the reactivity.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So right now, I'll talk about the reactivity portion. So smaller dogs, obviously, so smaller dogs think the same as a Doberman or a Rottweiler. They have the same brain. Right. But again, because of how they're treated, it's different, right? And that's like the benefit of having a small dog sometimes, right? And I'm not saying if you pick your, like, I would pick up my small dog if I could, absolutely. But I would also make sure that I have balance, you know. I would pick the small dog up if I'm late for my, you know, train or something. Like, it's different, right? I wouldn't just say, oh, there's a problem, right? Or if I saw a big, gigantic, scary dog, I would pick my dog up. Or if I saw a hawk circling us, I'd pick my dog up. That's like kind of the benefit of having a smaller dog. And if I was hanging out on the couch, I would let my dog sit with me. That is the advantage. You just want to make sure that you're balancing these things out. So my point is when you're correcting a smaller dog, so let me back up. When your dog is reacting and saying, and it sounds like to me, and you guys tell me, when your dog just sees another dog, he's like, bah! Okay.
Yeah.
So that means the other dog could be an old lethargic senior dog walking around and your dog's like, bah! So that's just classic. It's just like with humans, right? It's like somebody bumps into you wrong on an accident and you're like, what'd you say? And you're like, dude, what's your deal? Like, you got issues, bro. Like, I didn't do anything, right? It's kind of like that where you see a dog that's all of a sudden like freaking out at the presence of another dog. It's classic insecurity. I can't handle my own, therefore I must potentially scare you away or make you feel threatened. Lamest terms, right? It's like the easiest way I can explain it in my experience. And so there's this like initial, when we talk about leash reactivity, think about reaction. Think about Pepsi and Mentos or putting somebody into a hot tub or a cold plunge. It's like immediate, it's this reaction, right? Your body, your mind, your emotions, everything reacts to the environmental change. It's not like, think about a reaction. If something enters your environment that forces you to react. You're out for a walk and he's just chilling and he's walking and sniffing and doing his thing. And all of a sudden a dog boom, he reacts. So that's why that reaction happens, is he sees a dog and he's like, ah. So there's the insecurity part of, as a dog, I don't know how to handle this. But then also, in most cases, it's a blend of, I don't know how to handle this, and you've proven to me, mom and dad, you don't know how to handle this. And what that looks like is tip, and this is not, this is normal for humans to do. It's just not the right thing to do. But we get into this perpetuating kind of downward spiral where the dog goes, ah, and the other dog's like, what? You know? And what we do is we're like, it's okay, it's okay. And sometimes we pick the dog up, or we pet the dog, or we try to console the dog in a very emotional response. When, and I'm not saying that that's the reason why things get worse, but that's usually the reason why things get worse. Meaning it's not consistent with every single dog I've seen. It's just when I see a dog that goes, ah, there's a dog. And then the owners, the people that he cares about the most, are like, it's okay, it's okay. It's kind of like going to the doctor's and the doctor walks in and you're like, it's okay, buddy, it's okay, everything's gonna be fine. And the kid's like, what, freaking out. They're like, what's going on? So you want to, what I do and what I've been successful with is just correct the behavior when it happened, like really calmly, not really feeding into it and providing almost more flame to the fire instead of like almost acting with the dog of like, ah, you know, it's like, it's okay, like freaking out. It's more of a very assertive, calm, leave it. We'll talk about the actual correction, but it's leave it and correction, right? So the correction to define is to precisely communicate with the dog what they're doing is inappropriate and you want them to change their behavior, right? So your job as dog owners is to teach your dog like you would with a human kid what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, right? I have a two-year-old. I have another newborn. My two-year-old right now is learning please and thank you. I want my oatmeal, or I want whatever. He's not doing it in a sense of I want to be rude. He doesn't know. And my job is to say, how do we ask? Please. What do we say? Thank you. Okay. Let's make that a habit, right? Good job. Here's your oatmeal. So we're using positive reinforcement. But my point is I'm correcting him when he does something I don't like. But with humans, I can communicate like I am communicating with you guys. We learn all these different languages for that reason. And with dogs, one of the main languages they learn is body language and physicality. Like that's how they communicate. If you watch canines in general, wolves, domesticated dogs, feral dogs, they communicate with their mouths usually. They correct each other. They say hi to each other. They play with each other. So my point is it's not as easy as saying, hey, Fido, quit barking. Like that, mm-hmm. You know, so we have to teach them. So it would be leave it, correction. Now the only, I'm not saying that the mechanics of whatever tool you're using is not effective, because I'm not sure that you're using it right, but you want to make sure that you're not nagging your dog. You're just trying to be precise, snap them out of it. It's like when you're driving and you hit the rumble strips. The rumble strips isn't going to sing you a lullaby. It's very different than the smooth road you're on, right? You're driving, oh crap, right? So you have to, I'm going to give you a couple options for the correction. You guys can kind of go down the route, what A, you feel comfortable with, and B, if you go down a couple different routes, what works. A lot of my clients will order a couple things offline, see how they like it, see how the dog responds, and then go with that, and then keep or return the other one. But essentially, you should be going out and working on, you're out for a walk and your dog, blah, screams. You correct the dog. You could use a slip leash. That's what I usually start off with smaller dogs. I have a No Bad Dog slip leash, which the difference between mine and others that you can go and get downtown at the store right now is the slip leash basically has a tab that keeps it in place. So you slide it together like this, making it the proper size, custom size, right? But a lot of slip leashes that you'll buy in the store, the tab that you slide down to hold it into position is typically cloth or leather, and it wears over time, and it eventually makes the slip leash fall out of place. And with the slip leash, especially with a smaller dog, you have to be mindful and, of course, careful how you're popping that leash and that collar, because they're smaller and we're stronger humans. And so it has to be in place. You want it sitting right behind the dog's ears. You're not trying to choke the dog. You're not, and I say that because a lot of times if you use like a regular leash or collar, especially with a smaller dog with no engagement, they're like pulling and hacking, and you guys have probably already seen that. Mm-hmm. So you're going to use the slip leash as a good start. There's like a ladder to this, right? But the slip leash is a good place to start. And then second to that, what I typically like to use with smaller dogs is what's called a plastic pinch collar. It's a Star Mark training collar. So STAR Mark, MARK. You can get it on Chewy or Amazon. Living in the city, you guys could probably order and it'll be there tomorrow morning or even tonight. But you get a small one, okay? And it comes in two sizes, small and large. You get a small one, and you can customize the size of the collar by breaking the different links out to make it fit your dog. And that's a good hybrid. So what you want is when you guys are correcting your dog, it has to matter. Like, we can talk all day about what your dog likes and what they don't like, but at the end of the day, when you're correcting, we can call it a lot of different ways. Correcting, punishing, holding your dog accountable, teaching your dog, communicating with your dog. When you are trying to say quit that behavior, you're trying to discourage your dog and break the cycle of what they're doing, right? And oftentimes it's uncomfortable, but that's kind of the objective, right? When somebody's screaming at somebody else and they're losing their mind, like a good friend or colleague or a family member isn't sitting there like petting them, right? They're like, hey, snap out of it. What are you doing? This is crazy, you know? You have to almost abruptly, not physically, of course, but you have to have something that snaps your dog out of what they're doing. And it's either, and it's usually accompanied with leave it correction. So in lamest terms, it's right now what you could, what likely I would, you know, bet the farm on two things is when you have to have a game plan. So you have to teach the behavior that you want to apply before you apply it in reality. So for an example, if I was going to teach a dog how to heel, which is walk nicely on the leash, regardless of their environments and surroundings, I'm not going to walk downtown the city and teach heel. I'm going to work in the home, in the side yard, in the hallways, around the elevator. Like, I'm working everywhere I can to say, hey, this is what heel is. And then we go out to reality. So I'm teaching this. So when you're doing leave it, I would suggest using teach the word inside and then hold the dog. So accountable, it's called enforcement. Okay. So we're enforcing something. Think of law enforcement, like the two words, law enforcement officer. Excuse me. They are enforcing a law, just to make it easy, just for you guys to understand that. Like, when you say, for an example, sit, you say sit, okay? And the dog knows sit, but they're like, screw you. There's other things going on. You would hold the dog, you would enforce your sit, right? You would enforce the sit with some sort of accountability because your dog goes, I'm not listening to you. You have two options. You either go, I don't really care, my dog listens to me. Not only does your dog not listen to you in that little momentary second of what you want your dog to do, but on a larger scale, your dog learns that they don't listen to you, which then develops insecurity, frustration, lack of, there's a lot with your relationship. So it's way bigger than that, right? Confidence, all that. So my point is when you hold the dog accountable, when you say, no, I said sit, you're holding them accountable. So they know that when you say something and they don't listen, there's actual enforcement behind it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. So oftentimes, and likely what you guys are starting off with, like the very first thing is when you're going, typically people are like, hey, knock it off, or no, or don't. Whatever you say, it doesn't really matter as long as the dog knows what it is the enforcement that you're using, or maybe the consequence that you're using isn't effective. So if you're holding on to the dog and they're like, and you're just like pulling the dog back, that's not going to do anything.
Right.
And in fact, it can make it worse because it kind of, like, you want, it's the same thing with people in a situation where there's like stress, regardless of if it's in the public workplace or at home or something happens. Like, you want somebody that's like, hey, you do this, you do that, you do, oh, it was just like, you want somebody to confidently and assertively go, this is what we're doing. And with dogs, especially with yours, they can get so stressed. Like, you don't realize how stressful it is for them. And that's the thing, is some people will say like, oh man, is it uncomfortable for your dogs to get corrected, or do they get stressed? Yeah, but that's the point. It's momentary compared to the lifetime of stress that they have of not being able to walk down the road and enjoying life, right? So these are just conversations. I know that you guys, you know, I'm not talking to dog trainers here. I'm talking to dog owners who are just trying to figure out what's the best way to train their dog. And these are some conversations that come up as you guys are, you guys are looking for answers, right? You, especially in the dog training world, is unbelievably like all over the place, you know. And I'm just a dog owner that just turned professional because everyone's like, you know, it just happened that way, right? So now I'm an expert. I've been doing it now for 13 years professionally, and I can just tell you it's a confusing world out there. But I'm just saying, when your dog just goes outside and you guys are like, I'm going to go on a nice walk with my dog that I love, and they see another dog and they turn this walk into a chore,
yeah,
you're stressed. They're definitely stressed, and potentially even the people that are around are stressed, right? So you want to make the correction. You're not trying to hurt your dog. You're trying to make what they're doing uncomfortable so they don't do it again. And it's the same principles of positive reinforcement. If a dog does something we ask them to do, we are using positive reinforcement. We're adding something to the equation to reinforce that behavior, to do that again. We want you to do that again, right? And if anybody believes in positive reinforcement to encourage behaviors, right? The exact opposite of that is using positive punishment to discourage behaviors, right? So that's the very first thing I would say likely is going on. I have hundreds of documented things on YouTube for free that you guys can watch of me doing exactly that, where a dog comes in and they're so used to just reacting. They see a dog and they're like, blah. I do a couple corrections. I say, leave it, correction, just like that. Not loud, not yelling. Leave it, pop. Leave it, pop. And the dog snaps out of it. And they're like, whoa, dude, good, leave it. Heel, I move forward. They see the same dog in the same room, and they're looking. Yes, boom, and they get paid. Whoa, boom, and they get paid. Sit, boom, they sit. Look at the dog, look back up at me. Boom, they get paid. And they almost take this deep breath. And I can just say objectively that that's not just my opinion. That's just what I've done on camera hundreds of times for free on the internet. It's something that a lot of dogs who actually aren't mean or aggressive, like your dog, like he just doesn't know what to do. He's classical leash reactivity. What do we do? And he's wearing it because you got to think dogs are very smart and conditioned animals. You crumple the chips. They're like, ooh, chips. You get their leash. Ooh, the leash. You come home from work. Oh, you're home from work. They hear the keys. Like, these are conditioned responses. This means this. So a lot of times, especially with smaller dogs, to give you context of why these things really evolve and kind of get out of control, is when he acts like this, he gets what he wants by getting out of the situation, typically. So you may pick him up and go, ah, sorry, we're out of here. Sorry, everybody. Woo, my bad. You know, my dog's crazy. So those are the other things, too, that obviously unintentionally that we do that we don't realize is damaging to the law. Like in the beginning, we may think we're doing everybody a favor by saying, I'm going to remove my dog from the situation. But it's kind of like, just if you just figure it out, like within the first week, you won't see it again. But that's the other thing that happens with classical leash reactive dogs. They see a dog and they know that they've been conditioned that if they react a certain way, they get removed away from the dog. So what questions do you have on that so far?
So the accountability part, that would be the correction, right?
Yeah. That's
when you say, like, hold them accountable, that's where the correction comes in, right?
Yeah, that's the... Yes. But to be clear, the accountability and the enforcement is going to be two steps, let's say. The first step is your voice, leave it. And then if the dog says, screw, so again, we talked about the dog has to know what leave it is in the beginning, which is what you would work on in your home. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you how to do that too. It's really easy. So if you say leave it and the dog flips you off, then it's going to be holding the dog accountable with the correction. And then what ends up happening over time, people who don't enforce the words that come out of their mouth or even reinforce the words that come out of their mouth, if they don't pay the dog, if they're done right, it's not going to stick. If I wanted to teach my dog a new behavior, like sit, and they finally sat, and I just stared into space, I'm not going to capture that behavior. They're going to go, okay, that wasn't it. What is this sit thing? Give me the food, right? So it's the same thing with the opposite, excuse me, of discouraging behaviors. So my point is ultimately when you guys get this, it should just be your voice. So when you say leave it, the dog goes, oop, okay, fine. Right? So you shouldn't depend on any piece of equipment, regardless of what it is. Once your training is solid and your dog is trained, you shouldn't depend on equipment. That doesn't mean you're not going to have equipment on. That doesn't mean you won't have to use it ever so often or at some point. It just means that when you guys are training with your dog, right now when you say leave it, there's a good chance you're pulling your dog back and making it worse. You're not actually saying, hey, snap out of it, dude, and being assertive and calm. You're probably just adding to it. And so that's something I want to be clear. Yes, the correction and the accountability in the beginning is leave it, correction, leave it, correction. You wait 2 seconds, the dog looks again, leave it, and they snap back at you and go, okay, yes, good, leave it, well done. Then the leave it is coming from your voice, and the equipment helped you get there. But you shouldn't be dependent on any equipment, regardless of if it's during positive reinforcement training. You shouldn't need an Italian deli to get your dog to sit, okay? You also shouldn't need any type of training collar to get your dog to not do something. But in the beginning, it certainly is the way that you're going to shape things because that's how you teach animals certain things. So does that answer that question?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I just find that with dogs like yours who aren't real mean and they actually don't, they're just reactive. They look like they're ready to kill something, but they're not. And actually, if you drop the leash and walk away, they'd probably run with you instead of run towards the thing they're barking at. You just need to really clearly like, hey man, snap out of it, quit it. Mm-hmm. And it gives them an opportunity. Like, again, it's like clockwork. I have this documented so many times. Typically how it goes is they're almost like, oh, here's the dog. Okay, here we go. Ah, right. And you're like, hey, leave it. Bang. You correct them. They're like, holy shit, what was that? They stop. You go, good, leave it. They look back at the dog. You say, leave it. You correct them again. They're like, whoa, I don't like that. And you pair it. You go, well, good, because every time you do this, that happens. And dogs are smart enough with the chip bag and the leash and the keys and that's why dogs learn behavior. Sit. Oh, if I put my butt in the ground, I get paid. Good. And again, like fundamentally, we believe to encourage behaviors, it's the same exact principles for discouraging behaviors, right? So what ends up happening is dogs, when they go out and see dogs, they're like in the beginning stages of this because they're so conditioned, it's a bit suppression. It's a bit compulsion. It's a bit like you're forcing them. They're almost like, I don't want to get in trouble. I'm not going to bark. But that's normal because I've been doing it for so long, but they're like, I don't want to get in trouble. But then what ends up happening is they're like, they start going, they start air scenting the dog and looking at the dog instead of reacting. And that's where you come in. Yes. Good. Good. Leave it. Good. Good. And they're like, oh, okay. So I don't have to react and freak everybody out because I don't like doing that anyway because I'm not a mean dog. I just don't know what to do. And I get paid. I'm going to start doing this all the time. When I see a dog, I'm just going to be as quiet as I can. And so that's typically the process in which I see once the dog is able to take a deep breath and go, hey, who are you anyway? What are you? And the other dog's like, dude, you've been barking at me for like 6 months and I haven't even looked at you. But what I find is, which leads me to like the second thing, guys, is common things that create this behavior are, one of the biggest things is lack of accountability on thresholds, like basic thresholds. So how do people get into this place? They get into this place by not putting really any foundation in with the dog. Foundation would be boundaries. Simple, basic boundaries, just to get the dog to check in with you. So a lot of people, what they do when they get a dog is if they get into training classes early on, a lot of it is teaching the dog new behaviors, like sit and down and stay and maybe even some cute tricks, which is good. It's good to do. It's good for your relationship. It's healthy to start off on developing some sort of relationship and some workability between you and your dog. There's absolutely zero things wrong with that. But it's not just that. Because then what happens is the dog has this one-sided, one-dimensional illusion that if they want something, they come to you. But when you want something from them, it doesn't matter because it's on their terms. They're only going to come to you if you want something. So you kind of teach them very early on two things. A, if you want something, come to me. But if I want something from you, that's never been taught. You've never been taught really how to check in with me just because I said so. It's kind of in this like unrealistic training environment where we have the treat pouch, we're in this room, you have an instructor, and okay, we listen here, and this is where I get paid. But the other thing is the dog simply really only works for that food. And that's where I have, like, you guys have probably found me on YouTube at some point, right? Where I primarily deal with behavioral cases. So people coming in with these big, scary, reactive, aggressive dogs or reactive dogs or dogs who have bite histories and things like that. That's my bread and butter. And I can tell you that every single one of those dogs are all lacking the same thing.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Like, what are the things that every single one of those dogs are lacking? And it's basic thresholds, which is essentially very early on in your relationship with your dog, you work on basic principles of thresholds, which essentially means the dog asking for permission for something. It would be the equivalent to teaching our kids please and thank you. Can I please have this? Yes. Like, if my kid's like, give me oatmeal. And I'm like, is that how we ask? It's like, oh, please, daddy, can I have oatmeal? Yes. Right. I don't get mad. I'm like, you're two. You're still new to this. Right. But it's the same thing with dogs. Like, for an example, we don't intentionally do this, but let's say we put food down and we're like, wait right there. Don't eat it. Like, a lot of people can't do that unless they practice it. Right. So same thing with like a threshold is basically to define that is anything the dog wants or thinks that they're going to do, like going through a door, going out an elevator, if you're crate trained, getting out of the crate, if you put the food bowl down, that's mine, right? Bang, they go to it. You want to be able to be like, wait. Again, it's like going to a crosswalk in the city, which there's a lot of them if you're walking somewhere, which is mostly what people do, right? And just walking. Just because there's a crosswalk there, we just walk. It's like, no, that's dangerous. You got to wait for your turn. So it's the same thing with dogs. I really like to just take a leash and start developing engagement. It's not so much like, I don't really care if my dog sits and waits for their food. I don't really care if my dog asks for permission to go out the front door or the back door. But it's not so much about that. And it's more about, do you matter with your dog at all? And here's typically how to judge that. If you came into my facility upstate right now and you said, hey, Tom, here's my dog. Here's how reactive they are. I would be like, I don't really care about that. Here's why. I would say, ask your dog to sit. And they're sniffing and they're kind of jittering around and looking and they may be barking and they're just like disengaged. And you're going, dog, sit, sit. And they're just like, like they can't even fathom even looking at you, let alone listening to you, right? And the reason that is, guys, is because they're so conditioned to pretty much do whatever they want on the leash. You're not practicing very basic, again, manners is basically, it's like the easiest way I can explain it is when I'm talking to you, dog, that I'm responsible for, I need you to listen. Like, I need to matter. Like, if I'm like, dog, sit, and your dog's just like, it just goes right over their head, like, that's a huge problem. But I can tell you, I would even say 10 times out of 10, definitely, definitely, 9 times out of 10, any dog that comes in with any type of either real aggression or leash reactivity, not one of them can look at their dog and go sit, and the dog goes down, boom, stay, walk away. Not one of them. They all lack this very principle foundation of, hey man, you know, you let's say you walk up to your front door, however you guys leave your home with your dog on a leash, and you say stay, and they just sit there and they freeze and they look at you, and you walk straight through that door and you drop the leash and you walk around the corner and they're just sitting there. Can I come? Can I come now? No? Okay. Let me know. Waiting for you. You let me know. Your cue. Your call. None of them have that, right? So my point is with my experience and being an expert in this, almost predominantly just behavioral stuff, is that's how you guys get to these places, is because you're disconnected. Your communication is non-existent, right? Like, you guys love each other. There's absolutely no doubt. However, there's no like real boundaries. There's no real consequences. There's no real respect. There's not, like, if you guys were like, hey, knock it off, you might scare your dog by yelling at them, but they're not understanding what you're saying. And I'm just saying, like, you guys should really, again, talking about the second half of what creates these things, these are the things that creates your dog becoming insecure, becoming reactive, becoming, we can't handle, like, as a whole, as a group, you two plus the dog, we can't handle this other dog, because you're not instilling confidence in them by, you're basically letting them do whatever they want. And I'm just saying that, like, confidently, that's what everyone does that ends up here, is they're basically like, you can do it anything you want. And so in order to really counter these things, guys, start working on these very basic principles of thresholds, which is putting your dog on a leash and doing the very basic. Like, seriously, here's something I almost like wrote a book about. It'd be like 2 pages. If you have a behavioral problem with your dog, turn the page. Everyone turns a page. Will your dog sit without any tools the first time? No. The end. It's like, honestly, it's so simple to me that if anybody has any type of behavioral problem with their dog and they can't do the absolute most fundamental thing without sit, and they're snapping and they're getting their treats and they're squeaking their squeaker and the dog's like, and I'm like, dude, you're so disconnected from your dog, which is why you have all these external problems, these symptomatic external problems. And so once you start really developing a healthier relationship with your dog in conjunction with holding your dog accountable, like really holding them accountable when they absolutely freak out for no reason, if your dog was 60 pounds heavier, you guys would be dealing with a whole different thing, right? You'd be like, we can't even, like, you guys can walk now physically. You don't want to because it's stressful. Like you said, like, we basically, when we see a dog, we run the other way or whatever. But like, if you had a heavier, bigger dog, it would be a liability. So yeah. My point is I can promise you that if you guys start working on assertively holding your dog accountable at the moment when it happens, like, hey, quit the crap right now, it's inappropriate, calmly, but actually there, right? Like, sternly, but also going home and developing the very basics that you need. So basically the way that I look at it from a professional standpoint is, Tom, I'm having really hard times with AP science and advanced mathematics, but I skipped grades 1 through 8. I'm like, okay, well, duh. You don't even know anything. You have no foundation. Of course you're having advanced problems. Does that make sense? So
yeah, if I want to add something, is sure. That in terms of Zuko, in the house, he he listens to basic commands, like you said, like stay, like sit. When I put his food, his bowl food, because you know, we try this. I put him on yeah. We have like a little place mat where, good. You know, I call him like, go place, because he knows I'm going to give him food. He stays on his place, and then I put his bowl of food, and he can be waiting until I say okay. And if I say okay, he jumps into the food. So I think in that part, you know, we try a lot in training him on basic commands. The problem with Zuko is if there's distractions or if there's a dog, all of the things that he knows goes away. Like he just snaps out of it. He doesn't care what we say. But if there's no distractions, he will listen to them.
Right. Yeah, and that's common. And that's good that you have that obedience. That's really good. But I would just remind you that when you're... So essentially, it's like... The way that I look at that is my dog... It's almost like you have obedience until it matters, until you need it.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That's how we feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have obedience, good dog, but when there's an issue, we can't do anything, yeah. Really. It just doesn't listen
it's
to
like,
us.
Yeah. It's like it all goes out the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
And typically, guys, here's how I see it, in my opinion, is think about the scenario, okay? Tuko, you place here, you stay here, food's down. When I release you to the food, you get it. So the dog knows. In the beginning, it probably wasn't. So they're probably scraping for the food. You're like, no, da-da-da, no. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they break. Good. That's perfect. That means that you fundamentally have done everything I've talked about. You're just doing it at level one, and you need to be doing it at level five. Okay? But the problem is this, is the dog knows at the end of the tunnel and at the end of the game, I get paid. So I will sit here patiently because we do this every night, every meal. This is fine. Now, the moment you throw in another dog, no way. The dog's, he's off, right? Or the moment you maybe do it longer than you normally would do or whatever. You add one little thing. And so the dog is so routine, but at the end of the day, the reason why the dog is completing the task successfully is because A, you're practicing, which is good, but B, there's a happy ending every time. So they just know that patiently, if they sit there, they get paid. So once reality sets in, that's where, and so many dog owners have this problem where they're like, my dog listens until reality, or they'll say it a different way. My dog listens great inside, but not outside. And all that means, if your dog listens great inside and not outside, a couple of reasons. The main reasons are, is you just haven't copy and pasted the training outside properly, which means you're working on this food, sit, stay every night, and your dog's crushing it, and then you go outside and try to do it with garbage, and it's like a completely different scenario. Or there's currency levels. Think about it like that. Dogs have currency levels. So they know inside, in the comfort of their own home, with the two people they love the most, after 180 times of doing this, at 180 days or whatever, they know it's going to happen. And so their currency is, if I do well, I get paid, and pretty much that's the only outcome. But the problem is in the beginning, you probably had to pull the dog back a bunch of times. And so dog owners end up in this situation a lot. And it's good because you have the ground, we have the framework. You can do it. Your dog can do it because you've already done it. You've taken something that they want the most, which is food, and you've said you have to be patient. And all you have to do is basically transfer that to other things. One key ingredient to reality, other dogs, squirrels, chipmunks, rats, garbage, whatever, is the accountability when the dog's like, I'm choosing the currency over you. So once he goes, you say, like for an example, if you're inside and you say, stay, and the dog's like, I'm going to stay because when you tell me okay or break, I'm going to go get the food. When he sees another dog, the currency is so much higher that he blows you off. It would be like if you put down like, and I don't know, take this with a grain of salt, but if you put like a package of hot dogs down it'd be a lot harder. He'd be like, oh, I gotta get that. Oh, you know, he'd be like, I need to get that. That's a different meal, right? That's like super, super currency. Like that's like a $100 bill and I normally get like $5 bills or quarters, right? So my point is when you go outside and he's like, screw what you say. That's where dog owners are like, oh, I don't understand. He's doing so good inside. It's because a lot of times they know what to do. They know what you said. They heard you loud and clear. They're just not doing it. And yeah. You, right? And then what happens is you're fighting tooth and nail. You're like, and so what you do, you pull the dog back, you tell them no, or in your case, whoop, you scoop the dog up and you leave, or you walk the other way. And they, so you're not actually holding, you're not teaching, like that's such an opportunity to teach your dog something, to actually really, you know, figuratively hold their hand. I stay in that space. Like if I have a dog across the street, especially living in the city, you know, you're going to just see him all the time. I just stay there. I'm like, leave it, leave it. And the dog finally, or the second time or third time is like, fine, good, leave it. And then you move on and you just kind of grind through these things. But right now, the reason why you're not seeing any progress is simply because you probably have the wrong tools. So the dog is pulling, they're hitting the nose and the mouth, kind of like this halty situation, and the dog's pulling against it, and you're kind of just pulling back, or you're walking away, or you're just dragging the dog away. And yeah. I would like you to be more like super calm, staying right there. Leave it, just kind of snapping the leash. The other thing that's how many pounds is your dog?
12, 13.
Yeah, he's tiny.
Yeah, so. I would look up again, you can get no bad dog slip leashes, or if you have one now, you can actually make your own too. But I just think you guys need something that's more assertive that can help you become more sustainable. Because at the end of the day, when you go outside and your dog sees a dog, and here's the other thing that I didn't say, it's not our objective to ignore dogs completely, although that would be, I think, an unrealistic ask, but it's just to say, yeah, there's a dog. You can alert and sniff and posture up and go, yeah, there's a dog. And as long as you're, yeah, there's a dog. Cool. Let's go. Move on, right? And then, oh, okay, good. So you're not trying to say to the dog, don't care about dogs. Don't look at dogs. Don't smell dogs. It's just, hey, man, when we go outside, there's no reason for you to lose your mind. Because your dog's not, here's the other thing that I always think about, which I kind of mentioned in the beginning, is ultimately your dog is living a very, like your dog's quality of life isn't good. Because when they go outside, which is an animal's time to live life, like an animal, right? They're stressed the whole time. And you're stressed. And that sucks because, you know, that's not, it's not a good life to live. It's this very stressful, very small world that they live in actually, is every time they're out, they're constantly looking over their, you know, and your job is to clear that up and go, hey, whoa, chill out, dude, stop that, quit that shit. And the reality is once they stop barking because they're so like, I don't want to get corrected again, the thing that they're barking at is still right in front of them. And so that whole boogeyman thing of like, I gotta go, and then you basically, no, you can't bark anymore. And they're sitting there and they're like looking at the dog and they're like, well, now what? And then that's where it all happens. That's where they're like, you're not going to kill me? Are we dead? I'm okay. Yes, good, bang, and they get paid. Then it's like this whole revolution for them where they're like, oh my God, I don't have to do that. And that's what I've seen so much, you guys, to dogs. So I think you have two things that you guys have to be focusing on. Is when you go out, you have to have an assertive plan to say, quit the shit, man, relax safely, effectively. Most importantly, effectively, the dog has to care about it. You can't just, the dog pulls out, you pull back, the dog pulls out, and there's no correction there. You know, they're just picking the dog up and you're removing them. There's no like snap out of it there. And then the second thing is just making sure that you guys are doing everything right behind the scenes. So changing up your routine of the kibble and the bowl and the place, change it up to taking really high pieces of value of food, hot dogs, treats, even the kibble, throwing it on the ground and walking around, your dog's going to start eating all those up. And you're like, ah, leave it. Nope, can't have it. and they sit there and they look at you and they're like, that's eventually what will happen is engagement. So they'll look at you for permission instead of the food. Can I have it? Yes. Boom. And you break them. And then so you're just starting to say, hey, I am the gatekeeper of these things. Two things will happen. You're not trying to gatekeep your dog because you're the boss. You're trying to gatekeep the dog because you need some ruly order with your animal. They need to know that, just like with kids, when they see the ice cream truck, that they're not running across oncoming traffic to get to it. Respect me, listen to me. I ultimately make the rules. And if you do listen to me, I'm going to safely walk you to that ice cream truck and you're going to have whatever. You can have your cake and eat it too, right? Same thing with dogs when they're out for a walk. We're going to go out for a walk. And if you stop harassing and freaking out at other dogs, we're going to stay out longer. You're going to get more walks. You're going to get more exercise. You're going to be out longer. And most importantly, you're not going to live a life of fear and stress. So when you're inside, work, change, do what you're doing, but make it harder for the dog. Same thing with thresholds. Go out like you're walking out the door like you do every day. Work on your stay there. Because if your dog can stay for food, you should be able to take that same stay and use it for other things. So that he's probably going to do the same thing that he would do when you did the food. No, I'm going with you because that's what we do every time. Right? And you're like, mm-hmm. Nope, use your leash. Nope. Nope. You're correcting him. Right? It's the same type of thing. Nope, stay. But you have to make sure that the dog knows stay. So do things like that and advance it. Change it up. Don't just do it once. Oh, we did it. Okay. Walk up to the door to go stay. Drop the leash. Go out the door. Walk away. Out of sight. You come back. He's still there. Bang. Pay him. Good. Break. Go back into your home. Go back to the door. Do it again and really change it up. Basically, listen to what I say. Don't worry about anything else. And at the end of the tunnel, at the end of this procedure, at the end of this routine, you ultimately get paid. But all you have to do is listen to me. It changes how they behave because you're basically managing how they behave because they're your dog and you're human and they're animal. That's how that should work. Also, you're developing a better relationship because the dog's engaged with you going, you know what, screw everything else. You guys are what matters. Good. Because their confidence goes up. Because right now, he's going out thinking, we're going to die. I got to react. And it's exhausting. And that's just not a good way of life for your dog. But that's how it happens. And that's how you guys can counteract it. You got to do both. You got to do the two things at once.
And when you practice at home, are you using the tool? Are you using in this case, the slip leash?
Yep. Yep. Because your accountability, so your voice is then enforced by something. Right now, you have no enforcement. So you go, hey, I'm a law enforcement officer and the speed limit around here is 30. And you got people running into your car 70 laughing at you. And you're just going, please slow down. Please slow down. Please slow down. Stop. Once everyone, they're like, no, this person doesn't. Nobody's actually going to get in trouble around here. Do what you want. It's just do you know what I'm saying? So my point is you are the one that you say, you sit, you stay, you leave it. Then that's what I'm saying is I want you guys to focus on changing your whole relationship with your dog. Not just, I want a better sit, stay, leave it. Those things are good, but what's going to happen is when you say something to your dog, no matter what it is, because if you've enforced things over and over again, your dog is A, happier because they just listen. You don't have to go through this whole process of giving your kids gummy bears just to put on their pajamas. It's like, where are we at here? Like, what is actually going on? Who's training who here? And then alternative or in conjunction with that and opposite of what's going on right now is your dog just listens because they know, like they just, that's like part of developing boundaries with dogs. They're like, I don't want to get in trouble. Like I respect my parents when they say I got to be home by 9. I don't want to get in trouble. When I got to do my homework, I don't want to get in trouble. It's not because we want to manipulate and like cage our dogs into every, but the reality is the life that dogs live without structure and leadership and discipline is awful because they don't have what they need in order to be healthy animals. They love you and they may seem happy and they may be happy for some of the day, but the other half of the day, you're constantly yelling at your dog. You're frustrated with your dog. Your dog's not listening. And within a year, you're not bringing your dog anywhere because they don't listen. because you're like, I just want my dog to be a dog and live free and do whatever they want, right? So to answer your question, when you're holding your dog accountable, the things that you do inside your dog, like, oh shit, they're serious. I'll listen. I don't want to. And then it transfers. So it's not so much, it does matter where you're at in the environment, but my point is you are the thing that they listen to. And if you start holding your dog accountable seriously inside, then it should transfer outside just as easy.
Okay.
Yep.
And then in the beginning, it's going to be difficult, obviously, right? Because he's going to need a lot of, a lot of correction, right? So is it safe to say that we're going to have to be doing like, leave it? Is that okay at the beginning or?
Yeah, it's okay. It's normal. Let's paint a picture here. So let's say you, like a easy example is, let's say you throw his favorite toy or squeaker or food. You're going to have him on your leash. You're going to say the thing that comes out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. You're going to say, leave it. Nah, bro, like that's chicken. Correction, right? So you're not going to nag him. Whatever you say to him is going to be your norm. So if you say, leave it, that's what you're going to have to say to get him to leave it. So just leave it, enforcement, he stops, good, leave it. So in the beginning, absolutely, he's walked over you guys since you've had him. So you're going against everything that you've already, you're reconstructing your agreement, if you will. And so you're going to get pushback. Hey, new terms in the company, guys. Oh, man, but I like being able to do whatever I want. It's like, yeah, I bet you do. But we're losing a lot of money here or whatever, right? So we need to change, okay? So yes, in the beginning, you're going to get pushback and confusion even. But just remember to just understand. I wish it was as simple as you guys were like, hey, my dog's barking. What do I do? And I'm like, oh, abracadabra, and it's over. Your dog's barking because your relationship, because your confidence, because you have no structure in your life with your dog. Your dog does whatever they want, and that's why they're insecure, and that's why they're barking. They're actually barking because they're afraid, because you haven't ever held your dog accountable. There's absolutely zero structure, right? There's no confidence, and that's what you've allowed. So when you're at home and you're working on these things, sometimes it's difficult for dog owners to do because they feel bad. Like, oh, he really wants it. I'm like, yeah, my kid also wants a lollipop at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. before they go to bed. And that's just not happening. They cry and it's like, well, deal with it. Sorry. Do I feel terrible? Do I want to give it to him? Absolutely. Because they're cute and I love him and I want to see him happy. But it's 9 p.m. You just had a bath and you brush your teeth and you're not having a popsicle at 9 p.m., right? It's the same thing with dogs is when you're working on the leave it and they're like, what the? But I owe it. It's like, new rules, bud. Sorry, we've created this monster and it's going to take a couple weeks for us to like reformat things. But once you're over that, you say leave it. And they're like, oop. Like, same thing with my 10-month-old Mastiff that I have. In the beginning, he's his biggest pain, like literally the biggest pain in the ass in the world, right? Just this dog who didn't listen, was all over the place. Now he's walking around my house. I can say down. Whoop. I don't need anything. He just does it, right? I tell him to come. He comes back. I tell him to heal. He heals. But it wasn't like that in the beginning. I had to really, and he's a blank slate. It took me a while to get him to that point. Now that he's there for the rest of his life until he lives until hopefully 10 and plus years, all the work's done. But you guys, since you got your dog, did the opposite, right? So now you basically are starting fresh, but you're also going against all the things that, you know, basically if he whined or wanted something or jumped on his back legs all cute, you're like, okay, fine. So yeah, in the beginning, it's going to be some pushback, but I can promise you this, your relationship will be healthier and stronger, and you'll be able to enjoy your dog once you guys get over that hump of, when I say something, that's how it goes. I mean, I don't know how, you know, it's when I grew up, that's just how it was. It's like, I have a lovely relationship with my parents, but you know, I just see people who they get, you know, whatever you want, you can have, and it just doesn't create a healthy, realistic way of life. It's like, if you got to work for something and you got to have some adversity and figure out, you know, how to live it. And I think in the beginning with him, because he's going to be so like, what the heck? I have to work for this. I have to listen to you. It's going to be a change, but I promise you it'll make your relationship better.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what we want. Yeah. For sure.
Well, you've gone, listen, you know, here's the good thing is you've gone down a road of, I'll let him do whatever he wants and get away with stuff. And here you are. Yeah, that didn't work. Right. So now you just have to switch it up. And so now, I know you guys know this, and I know you're like, okay, obviously we're making some mistakes. We're doing some things wrong. What do we do? And this is what you do. My suggestion outside of this, I have a Kickstarter course called the No Bad Dog Kickstarter course. It's essentially everything that we talked about. It's the five things that dog owners should know. It's the place, the recall, leash pressure, the break command, the stay, and I think heel. And those, but also it goes over how to like put on the thresholds too. And right now it's $100 off all my courses. We're doing this big sale for a couple months until the new year. So we have some new courses where it's $100 off if you use the discount code YouTube. Just one word, all lowercase, YouTube. So I think it's like $100. So it's like 50% off. I would suggest that because that's kind of like a take-home course that really goes over things more granularly. And it's nice to know when somebody says these things to you, but we're all human. After you guys go to sleep tonight, watch your favorite show and wake up tomorrow and go to work, you're like, wait, what did he say? So this course kind of allows you to go back and really look at exactly how to do it. And you have it forever. And you can also see me do it with a puppy. So that's the other suggestion I would have for you guys for homework.
And I guess I have one last question. And that's right now, once we do get the slip leash, he's a little dog. So is that like pretty easy to use? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Or with small dogs, there's always the fear of like, oh my God, this creaky is going to come out.
Yeah, the other thing. Yeah, for sure. The other thing that you guys can do is they make a small dog prong collar. I don't have one right here, but this is a 2.25, but they make a tiny dog prong collar. I can't remember the gauge, but the prong collar, on the contrary of what they look like, and especially people who don't know what they are, it's actually definitely one of the top safest tools to use on a dog, because when you put a slip leash on a dog, it's kind of like it's one point of pressure, really. And if you're not really timely with your corrections, you're going to end up in the same situation that you're in with the collar that or the setup that you have now. The prong collar gives you, like, depending on the size of the collar, like 20 points of pressure. So it's kind of like the difference between power steering with the prong and then not, or like studded snow tires and not, is it gives you way more contact. So you're less likely to make mistakes. And the dog is more sensitive to it, so you don't have to be, with your dog, it's kind of funny, but you don't have to put any power in it, but your dog, you don't anyway. So the smaller prong collar with a dog of your size is also a really safe tool. Your dog is going to be very sensitive to it naturally because your dog's never been told no. So there's that. If I were you guys, if you were like, what should I do? I would start off with the Starmark plastic pinch collar. Because that's going to be the better, the better collar for you. I'm trying to find the smallest, the gate. So there's for, like, yeah, go ahead.
E-collars are not safe for his size.
Say it again.
Does an e-collar is safe for his size or not?
Yeah, e-collars would be, absolutely. E-collar is safe for any dog size. E-collar is, you're using the e-collar as an extension of your voice, just like you are with the equipment with the prongs. The e-collar is actually way more customizable than any other piece of equipment because they're you are controlling the remote collar levels, right?
But with pain or like damage that can be onto him, like what is safest? Like would an e-collar be safest than the Star or the prong or would
yes
it be about-
well it's all subjective to how you're using it, right?
Okay,
that's a hard, that's a, if you're using everything right, they're all safe. When we're talking about like you can get an IQ Mini, which is like a dog, it's like a tiny little e-collar, and use the vibration setting to correct the dog instead of using the pop on the collar. Same thing. The problem is if the dog doesn't care about the pop, then you kind of revert back to, so there, here, this is what I found. If you guys go to Kimberlin collars dot KimberlynCollars.com. There's a collar that they make that's a two, what is it, a 1.5 micro collar. It's for tiny dogs like yours. Here's what I would do. Go to StarMark, get the StarMark collar first. And then you have a couple different options. But at the end of the day, guys, here's the thing. Right now, your dog has literally gotten away with everything that they've ever wanted to do, and you haven't been able to do anything about that, which is why your dog is insecure and fearful and reacting at everything. What I'm talking about is holding your dog accountable and correcting your dog for the first time for doing things you don't want. The equipment that we're talking about is just an extension of what, like, if I want to build a house, are there tools out there that I can go to Home Depot and buy to build a house? Absolutely. That's why they were invented. Same thing that what we're talking about, like, can I go to the store and get a training treat to reward my dog? Absolutely. Could I go to the store and get a piece of equipment that can safely correct my dog if they decided to bark because they're insecure? Absolutely. A lot of dog stores, though, they have shitty equipment. So I wouldn't go there. So what we're talking about here is I would go either StarMark. You could get the micro training collar by Kimberlyn, which is a 1.5 prong collar. Or you could use the vibration from a remote collar, and that would be helpful. Or Slip. There's a lot of options. That's what I was saying. I think one of the first things I said is when we started talking about corrections is I'm really big at what works. Like if you came to me and said, Tom, I trained my dog with worms and silly string, I would say, excellent. How'd you do it? But I just, over the years, I've accumulated information and I know what works and what doesn't work. And these are the things that actually work, not supported by an agenda. It's supported by facts and training dogs. So I would start with those things, but I would go, if I were you, the latter would be plastic collar, StarMark, right? And then it would be Slip and then prong.
Okay.
But they're all close. Okay. Like get a couple of them and see what works. That's it.
And should he be, since we are going to be doing training inside, right? Is he going to be wearing that inside as well?
Yeah.
Like, do I want to, because, you know, he's reactive to a lot of things also, doorbells, et cetera.
Yep.
So do I want to have that on throughout the day so that I can correct?
Yeah. So remember your remote collar or your prong collar or your plastic collar or your harness, anything that you're using is an extension of you to help learn in the beginning. Once the dog goes, oh, I listen to you and these things have helped me listen to you, those things go away. But in the beginning, those are going to be your training wheels.
Okay.
To help shape and mold and all that stuff. Yep.
All right.
Cool. All right, guys. Lovely talking to you and best of luck of everything.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, guys. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Just got a free coffee with my EarnIFI points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnIFI app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnIFIRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.